Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter podcast. Today, I'm joined by Kristin. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Nice chatting to you before we came on air there. We were talking about a combination of the election and the house fire, but both kind of crazy events that have happened recently, hey?
That's right. Just going with the flow here.
Yeah, but yeah, I hope everything at the house is okay and insurance are going to pay. Hopefully they're going to sort it out for you.
Yeah, actually that I'm finding out more every day. So okay. I'm going to be essentially redoing my whole house. So,
okay.
Silver lining, I guess.
Yeah, you'll get some news. You're highly massive inconvenience, especially around Thanksgiving, but you're going to get a load of new stuff. So it's not all bad.
Yeah. Correct.
Cool. Cool. But nice to see you again. For everyone listening, it's really nice to, we've done this a few times now, having fellow talent professionals and recruiters. And I know for everyone listening, Kristin's at VP level in the talent acquisition space. And I know from conversations we've had off air, you're one of the good ones. I can just tell, like when we chat, I can tell that your heart's in the right place and you actually really care and you're in the game for all the right reasons. But Kristin, for those of the listeners that don't know you, Kristin Cragg started off back at Apple One back in 2006. And then you moved to Celerity. You were a recruiter there for over 7 years. You then moved on to Itero Group. You were vice president of strategic accounts. And currently you are at JMA Resources and you are VP vice president of talent acquisition. So first of all, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm doing really well. I appreciate it. I'm really looking forward to talking today and sharing some insights about experiences that I've had working within this industry.
Cool. Yeah, no, likewise. It'd be nice to have a good chat. And I know I've done you a bit of an intro there, but I'll start where I always start, which is who are you? What do you get up to? What's a day in the life like of Kristin right now? And yeah, what's going on?
So I did start my career back in 2006 at Apple One. That agency was a national firm and I worked both sides of the desk. So I was recruiting and I was also doing business development for them. So that was definitely challenging. It had been the first time I've ever worked in the talent acquisition space. So as I proceeded more working with Apple One, I really found myself gravitating more towards the recruiting aspect of things. And so when I was approached by my old manager at Celerity to come to Celerity to be a technical recruiter, I jumped at it. It was new for me. I hadn't ever recruited within the technical space. I had done mostly like executive level positions, attorneys, paralegals, CPA, C-level individuals. And so I got into the business in the IT space with zero experience, and it has been amazing since. I really, truly love what I do. I'm a people person, and I'm very passionate about helping individuals.
Yeah, cool. Did you find it a big transition going from where you were before over to the tech world and dealing with all the great people in the tech space?
People would think it would be a yes to that, but the way I approach recruiting is pretty different. I am a very relationship type of building recruiter. So in my mind, people buy from me. They're not necessarily buying from the opportunity that they're interested in. So it was a little bit of a transition. Obviously, when I'm looking for Java developers, I'm not speaking to business analysts. I did understand that aspect of it, but I really focused on getting to know people, being vulnerable so people could open up to me. And I found the transition to be easy the first 2 years that I was with Celerity. And it was a really good experience. Celerity really gave me a lot of background and a lot of support. And I carry a lot of the things that I learned there with me today. I had really amazing managers. I have a mentor. Her name is Laura Leitner, who I worked with at Celerity. And now she is actually at JMA Resources as well.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, it's nice. And that relationship-driven approach, I think more long-term at the start, but over time, if you do that, it's a lot easier for the recruiter, and it's a lot easier for the candidates on the other side of the equation if you get to know each other and the trust is there, and it's everything just flows a lot easier, doesn't it?
And it took me a while, but I think that the main thing that has made me successful in what I do is the vulnerability that I show when I speak to individuals. Being vulnerable and opening up and being honest about experiences, whether it be professional and life, I think it really sets that person at ease and allows them to open up as well. And then you just naturally forge a relationship, a friendship. Okay. I've hired people that I'm still good friends with. So for me, it becomes much more relationship driven in the talent acquisition space.
Yeah, cool. Cool, Kristen. Out there, I feel like the market's starting to pick back up now, but in 2021 and two, it was red hot, and then 23, it really dipped off. And then now I think it's still been a rocky year for most, but it's getting better. For people out there that are struggling, do you see any common areas where people fall down or let themselves down in the process, or perhaps they're not the best version of themselves and they could progress better, or they could get more opportunities if they did things a bit different in the hiring process? Have you got any advice there for the listeners?
It pertains to the company that I work for and our hiring practices. I think they're very solid. We are a people first organization. So that first conversation that I'm having with somebody, I'm letting them know that. And so my advice to other organizations, people interviewing, job seekers, is be vulnerable, be honest, because I think that's something that when individuals are interviewing, they tend to not think is a good thing. Oh my gosh, I can't tell somebody that I had to take 6 months off because I had a mental health crisis. I don't want them to view me differently. I think the way the industry is going, it's becoming more humanistic and less just butts in seats. I think companies are really seeing that creating a psychologically safe environment is top priority for individuals, because people go through a lot. Life happens, and you have to be accepting of individuals as they come.
Definitely. I think the world's so transparent these days as well, which is making people that aren't like that, I think it's making them step up their game, because I just think employers, if they don't, they should do. But hopefully they realize that you've got to be like, if you want the best people and retain the best people and attract the best people, it's nice to be nice. And B, everything's just so much more out in the open these days. It's not like, perhaps, sure, you remember what it was like years ago. It just wasn't as nice as it is today.
It really wasn't. It was so transactional. It was so robotic. It was so just not authentic. And I think people are starting to be like, I am so sick of putting on a show for somebody. Let me just be myself and see where that gets me. And I think it's really working. At least for us at JMA, we have a super high retention rate. And I thoroughly believe it's because we're genuine and we are vulnerable. Every single person that you talk to within JMA has a story and they aren't afraid to tell it. And it creates a very real and warm environment.
Yeah, I think so. Kristen, it brings me on quite nicely to the next question. I've heard you talk about the culture at JMA quite a lot in quite a positive way. What makes it good? What makes it cool? What makes it special? And what can people learn from that, essentially?
Culture special is obviously the people. When I take a very personal approach to recruiting, I don't prep people for interviews. My first interview with them is not a video interview. It's a telephone interview, because I want that person to be at ease. I want them to be comfortable. I don't want them to have to feel as though they have to dress up, because I feel like that's really the way that you get to the core of somebody, is allowing them to be comfortable and be their authentic selves. And that is something that JMA really prides ourselves on, is when you come to work for us, you can be whoever you are. And we're family, and we don't judge. And our culture is warmth, it's kind, it's empathetic, and that definitely flows from the top down. Just to give you a little example of the type of organization we are, when I started with JMA in June of 2020, I have a lot of physical and mental health issues, one of them being lupus. And so I'm part of Johns Hopkins Lupus Center. And when I started with JMA, The type of benefits that we had were not accepted at Johns Hopkins. So the owner, Nancy Martindale, went out and changed our whole benefit package just so I could remain with my critical care doctors at Johns Hopkins. And that just is the core of who we are. And for her to do that just meant everything to me. And it's a place where I'm going to want to retire. And the way she leads the company trickles down through every level of employee. And I just think, again, it's leading with kindness, leading with empathy, leading with compassion, and really taking the time to truly understand that life happens to people. And that does not mean they're not going to be good employees. It just means that they have experiences that are different than from yours, and you have to be accepting of all people.
Yeah, no, that's good. And it's, yeah, shout out to her. She sounds like a bit of a legend.
She is awesome. I mean, I can't say enough great things about JNA and the leadership and just where we're going and how she's running the company.
Yeah, no, that's good. And yeah, by the way, what you said there about the culture, it's so true. Like, obviously, as an agency side, I'm dealing with so many different companies all the time. And often I know the founders from when they were small and then they get bigger. And I can see the way that the founder is. I can see that in the employees as the company gets even still fairly big, like it still trickles down. So it's so true. It all trickles down. And I think everything, even in a remote environment, I really do think it does. So yeah, no, it's good. It sounds like you've good vibe going on and it's nice. And I know you mentioned mental health there, Kristen, and it's nice to hear you being so open and like you said, vulnerable about that. I think it helps other people. And I think even like the most old school of people out there are like actually starting to accept that this is all a real thing and it's very much should be taken seriously.
Say that because within JMA, we're an IT consulting firm that works primarily with federal government. We're an 8A minority disadvantaged women-owned small business. So we're hiring a lot of veterans and veterans do come with PTSD and other mental health issues and problems. And we've stood up an employee resource group within JMA for veterans and their allies. And it is so beautiful to be part of this group and see the individuals who are more experienced in their careers, who had been in the military for 20 plus years, really being vulnerable and opening up about their struggles and telling their stories. And I have one employee in particular who really opened up the one day that we were having a group chat within this resource group. And that just allowed everybody else to open up. He's a leader within the organization. And then people see that happening and it just becomes this beautiful thing of sharing and caring. And that's what we are all about at JMA.
Yeah, I like that. And it's nice to hear that particular guy opening up and that giving everyone on the confidence. And that's why I like talking about things on the pod as well, because it's, I don't know, you might know more about this than me, Kristen, but I can remember having like where I was, but I was having a talk about mental health and this expert that came in was saying, it's the people that bottle it up that you really need to worry about. If you're talking about it and you're getting it out in the open and you're exchanging ideas, generally speaking, those types of people will probably be okay, even if they've got some struggles. It's the ones that kind of bottle it up and never speak. So I think doing what you guys and girls did there is a really good thing. And just talking about it now gives other people listening the confidence. So it's a good thing that we're getting to the stage where this is normal, if you like, whatever normal is.
Absolutely. And during our conversations, it's through Teams. And this particular individual typed out his whole story, and so people can go back and reflect on it. And everybody in JMA knows that I'm very open about my mental health struggles. And I can honestly say that if I reached out to, I would say, anybody within the organization and said, hey, I'm having a tough day, I need some support, they would drop everything and be there for me. And so that Teams channel with people sharing it in writing, I think it becomes even more important, because you can go back and reflect. And if you are having a bad day, you can go back and read what somebody wrote and know that it's okay to open up and be okay. And it's okay not to be okay too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of the time, sometimes these feelings we get, we think we're like abnormal or weird. And then you listen to a podcast or you listen to different people speaking and you realize that these things that you're thinking about or worried about or anxious about, we're all having these feelings. I heard the best saying out there recently, and it was like, the people that are confident, they're just like putting their feelings of anxiety into forward motion and getting things done. And we like to call that in society confidence, but they're just better at pushing forward with their anxiety, whereas some of us find it a bit debilitating and we have to get better at pushing forward or get better at talking about it or whatever it is. But it's just not even like some of the podcasts I've heard. There's one guy that I talk about a lot on this podcast called Steve Bartlett. He's got a podcast and he has lots of famous people on there. And some of these ultra successful people, and you listen to them and it's, God, they're having the same struggles or they've gone through this. So it's all very normal to feel these feelings, isn't it?
It really is. And for me, my mental health issues, I'm confident that I've had them, you know, for quite some time, but my mental health issues really came to the surface later on in my life. So it was a huge adjustment for me to be able to be like, whoa, I am not okay. And when I was at Celerity, I had my manager who was really supportive of me going to her and saying, hey, I'm not doing well today. And she would just say, just take it easy. Do what you need to do. And I think there needs to be more of that. That is something that we need managers and leaders who understand that life does happen and not everybody has a great day. And I also think the people that you really need to pay attention to are the ones that are always upbeat, that are always happy, that are always like over the top, because they're hiding something. They're covering something. And it's feels good when you work with somebody and you can get to the root and you can help them through their day by them knowing that, hey, she shared something, so maybe I can share something with her too.
Yeah, it's true that when you get people that are always all right, they're probably not. And yeah, I think it's a good, they probably need to be watched. Do you do any, I used to do loads, but I keep falling on and off. Do you do meditation at all?
I do. So I'm really into mindfulness. So I do meditation. I do like music meditation. I struggle a little bit with the complete silent meditation. So I like more guided meditation. I do a lot of journaling. I have spoken on mental health panels. I feel the more you talk about it and the more people become aware that it becomes easier and it becomes more of a natural thing for me.
Yeah, no, it's with the meditation and the mindfulness, I think it's great. And I think for like whenever I've done it and I've got that real clarity in my mind, everything's better. Like I'm a nicer person. I'm in a better mood. I'm nicer to my clients. I'm nicer to my friends, family. I'm not sure. And it really does make a difference. And I need to get back on it. It's like, do it. I get in a really good spot and then I get complacent with it and stop doing it. And that's not what not to do for everyone listening, but it definitely helps, and it helps in lots of different ways, not just with like happiness levels, but I think productivity and everything. It makes a big difference, doesn't it? But you take some discipline to do it on the regular, I find.
Oh, absolutely. For me, it was during COVID that I really honed in on that and really got into the wellness aspect of things. For me, journaling is probably my top release, because I find, again, when you journal, you're getting everything out on paper and you may think it's the worst day of your life. And when is this day going to end? How's it going to end? And you make it to the next day and then you look back and you say, oh my gosh, I'm here. I made it to the next day. Yesterday was the worst day of my life that I was ever having for whatever reason, but I made it to the next day. And I think journaling can really provide a positive insight to mental health, because if you're consistent with it, you see the ups and downs that, okay, I had 3 great weeks of being feeling great, but here comes a week where I'm not, but you know that you're going to get out of the cycle of it.
And so I find with journaling and writing stuff down, it just properly removes the clutter out of your head as well. It puts it on the page, doesn't it? It really helps. I sometimes do it like, I find it hard to be like really transparent when I do this, but I can almost do it on a, if I'm feeling in the mood, I can actually do it on a LinkedIn post where I can put my.
Oh my gosh, my I haven't thoughts. Gotten there yet.
Listen, I can't do it all the time, but if I'm in the right mood, I can actually do it on a post. And it's nice because you've got it there to look back to, and it killed two birds with one stone and helps other people while it's helping you. But yeah, no, the journaling, the meditation is really cool. And by the way, I think for people listening, what I've found is the people that don't think they need it, or the people that resist it, or the people that almost, I think they're the people that need it the most in my experience.
100%. They're just fearful. And we were all there at one point. And it just takes one little thing that makes them realize, okay, I do need some help. I do need to do something to help me break this cycle. And you're exactly right. They're the ones that need it the most.
Yeah, they are. I'm thinking back to one particular friend of mine who I always used to tell him that I meditated. And he actually almost used to take the mickey out of it in a nice way. But I was like, well, whatever. And then I found out that he's literally, his mind's racing. He's struggling to sleep. And I'm like, no, listen, you need this like as much as anyone or more than anyone. Absolutely. But I could never convince him, by the way. He just, he still.
He might be doing it and may not be willing to admit it yet.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I'll get to his house one day. I'll walk in and he'll just be sat there with the app on and the music on, and I'll catch him.
So. Incense burning. And
yeah. Cool, cool. All right, Christian. Yeah, what are you? What's going on at the minute in terms of your hiring? Are you on a kind of? Are you preparing for next year, or are you actually right in the throes of growth now? Or
so because we work primarily with the federal government, we go through real peaks and valleys, and there's a ton of red tape for funding and all this stuff. So right now we're in a lull, but we're going to be exploding. We see things coming down the pipeline. And so I am constantly pipelining folks, just going out, looking for the skill sets, reading through LinkedIn profiles. And I usually can tell pretty quickly if somebody is going to be a fit for our organization or not, especially when I get on the phone with them within the first couple of minutes. Because we, again, you could be the brightest Java developer. You could be the most savvy cybersecurity analyst. But if you're a jerk and nobody wants to work with you, like, we won't hire you. We firmly believe that having somebody be a cultural personality fit within our organization is just as important as somebody who has the technical skills. And even more so, because you don't want to bring in somebody who is going to throw off that the vibe that we have going on. We don't want to bring in people that don't believe in what we're doing and what type of organization we're building. I'm constantly pipelining, constantly busy, even if I don't have any specific positions to fill. So I'm always out there looking at trends, looking at people, seeing what they're doing, and trying to find the best talent.
Yeah, no, I like that. And that thing you mentioned there about, you know, just being a decent human being. I'm just thinking about one client that we completed on a search with them last week, and one of their core values is to be humble. Yeah, they're the same. It was a hacking role, a pen testing role, and they don't care if you're the best hacker in the whole of the US. If you're going to go in there and act like a diva and this, that, and the other, it just doesn't wash. And yeah, I think the whole industry, like maybe, I don't know, maybe like 7-8 years ago, things were a little bit different, but I think everyone's starting to realize that, especially if you're dealing with end clients and stuff like that in the commercial space or the government space. Yeah. You've just got to, I think those people skills and just being a decent person are really important. Christian, you said something a few minutes ago I just want to go back to. You mentioned about when you're looking through a LinkedIn profile and you're going to set up a conversation. What is it? I know there'll be sometimes there'll be a clearance aspect that you're looking for, but above them, what else are you looking for on a LinkedIn profile, or what can the listeners do to their LinkedIn profiles to attract people like you more often?
I think it's, for me, I like passive candidates. Those type of candidates to me are the ones that will last and stay within an organization, because if I reach out to them and they aren't necessarily looking for work and they're talking and engaging with me, I know that they're interested in the position and they're interested in JMA. I think the other, for me, I think the summaries, the professional summaries or the whatever they're called on LinkedIn about an individual, I don't even look at pages that don't have one. because, you know, I don't want to be scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. I want to see what this person has to say about themselves, how they sell themselves. So the professional summaries are a really big deal for me. And I also look at, I scroll all the way to the bottom and I look at the recommendations. In my mind, providing a recommendation for somebody on LinkedIn is a real pain in the neck. It's a lengthy process. So if somebody is actually taking the time and providing a recommendation for you on LinkedIn, I feel as though that it's authentic and it's real. If somebody asks me for a recommendation and I don't necessarily want to recommend them, I just won't do it, because it is time consuming. So I really look at the professional summary statement and the recommendations that people are getting.
Yeah, thanks. It's just nice to hear you double down on that point, because I think some people forget that these days your LinkedIn profile is, all right, it's a digital one, but it is your resume and it is your 3D resume, and it really does make a difference. And I know there's some good people out there. I'm sure you found them as well, that you get some good people out there that just haven't taken care of their LinkedIn profile, and it really makes a difference to their growth and their potential and to the opportunities that they get. It makes me feel.
I totally agree with you. And that leads into the whole resume kind of scenario. IT people aren't necessarily the best people at writing resumes, catching resumes. And so for me, if I see somebody who has a really well-written resume and has a really nice professional summary statement, to me, that shows that they're truly interested in themselves and selling themselves. So that's an indicator to me that they would be good with client relations, that they know how to have conversations with people. If I don't like resumes that don't have a summary statement. Now, I don't read cover letters. I'm not a cover letter. I don't really believe in the cover letter because it's speed to market. And I feel like that can be really time consuming reading cover letter after cover letter. Once you've been in the industry as long as I have, you can just breeze right through a resume and go to the parts that you're looking for. Like, I don't need to see grade point averages. I don't necessarily need to see hobbies listed on a resume, because that's all the stuff that I want to talk about when I have that initial conversation with somebody. I don't want somebody to say, if I put my resume out there and I put hobbies on there, I don't want somebody to exclude me because I'm part of a club or I have a hobby that they're totally grossed out at or don't like or whatever. So I don't necessarily want to see that on people's resumes, because it creates bias and that's not a good thing.
Yeah, it's amazing how many resumes I think are just all over the place. It's amazing how many resumes have got mistakes in them and stuff like that.
And
got
grammar, punctuation.
Yeah. And I see it all the time. And I see people that I've had a conversation with them and they come across great. And I'm pretty confident they can do the job. And then you see the resume and it's just all over the place. I'd be interested to hear what you think, Kristen. Spelling and grammar is obviously an absolute must. I just think as well, just very clear, concise, and to the point. Like, we're working on a CMMC search at the minute, and I was going through loads, and I just got this one resume through. This particular chap is progressing, and it was just a one pager, and it was just so clean and crisp and just to the point. And I was just like, it almost hit me, because it was one of those late evenings where you're going through loads.
I love that, because for me, again, it's time to market. So having to read through pages of resumes of projects that you did that don't even necessarily pertain to the position that you are interviewing for, that's all the stuff that should be found out in an interview. At JMA, I do the first round of interviews. And then if I feel the person is a JMA fit culturally, you know, professionally, then I recommend them moving on to the next step in the process, which would be the technicals. And then that's where I want people to talk about their project work, because I'm not understanding if somebody's doing an SAP HANA S4 implementation down to the very specifics of it. I want to know about the team that they were on. I don't want to see that kind of stuff on a resume.
Yeah.
I want to see a chronological order of where you've worked, who you've worked with, technologies. I like when people list technologies at the below each position that they worked on or worked with. I really like that. So yeah, concise, to the point is what I'm all about.
Definitely. And you mentioned speed to market a couple of times there, and true. And for people listening, and this is going to sound really harsh, but I'll tell you exactly what happens for me personally. If I'm engaged on a search, and I'll use Security Cleared as an example. If I'm engaged on a Security Cleared search, we're a retained agency. So we've got clients that are paying us a chunk of the fee up front. So they want to know what's going on, and they want to know what's going on fast, and they're under pressure their side. If I'm going through people and I've got 5, 6, 7 good people, and three, and they're all pretty similar, but 4 of the resumes are all over the shop, and I need to have a chat with them or something needs to do it, they're going to get pushed to the back of the queue. And that sounds really harsh, but if I'm under pressure from the client and I've got 1 or 2 resumes there that are phenomenal and nothing needs changing, they're going to go to the top of the pile. And those 4, they might get looked at next week, but if we get an offer straight away on those, they might not even get looked at, and they might have been just as good as the other candidate. And for candidates listening, they'll be like, God, that's so harsh. But when you're under pressure from both sides or your client, it's the way it is. And I think people need to be aware of it. That resume is really important for your overall progression.
It's a really big deal. I want to see, especially in the DoD space where we do primarily the bulk of our business, I want to see that people have secret clearances. I want to, or whatever clearance level. I don't want to have to search through a resume to find it. I want to see at the top what branch of the military you were in. I want to see where, if you went to school, where that was. I don't want to have to scroll through a ton of information to find out little pieces of the puzzle. I want it to be right there, because you're right. Sometimes you have a day.
Yeah.
You get a day notice. Hey, we need this position filled like by the end of the week. And it comes fast and furious to find somebody good.
It does. I know how urgent something. I was actually laughing with a client because she was messaging me on I did a LinkedIn post about it because we got on really well. And she was messaging me on a Sunday because she was so panicky about me and her getting this search done together. She was like the head of internal recruitment for an MSP up in North America. And it's, yeah, the people are under pressure and companies are under pressure to get things sorted. Yeah, we use that word speed to market, but the resume is massively, massively involved with that. Kristen, I want to talk to you more about mindfulness. Is there anything else on resumes that you think help folks out there that are struggling to get off the market? Or do you think we've nailed that? Or is there anything else that could be helpful?
No, not in particular. Again, okay. Concise, keep it short and sweet. Now, obviously, some people have more lengthy resumes because they've been in their careers longer. But I don't necessarily see going past 10 years. Like, I don't need to see what you did right when you got out of college or right when you got out of the transitioned out of the military. I want to see what's relevant. So 5 to 10 years of experience for me is what matters.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. The click on size is just massive. I can remember this particular night. I was literally just so relieved to just see everything I needed to see on one page. Perfect fit. I was like, thank God for that. I've been at it. You know what it's like when you're on those searches, but then one person just changes the whole search.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing too, a lot of times when you are working with bigger organizations, they have a vendor management system, and you have to be able to put that resume into a template that's required from that vendor management system. And a lot of times that's one page. So how do you fit 20 years of experience on one page if your resume is 20 pages? Really trying to make it concise and stand out is the key.
It is definitely the most soul destroying thing for me is when, as recruiters, we have and you talk about relationship driven, we have a lot of conversations. So we get to see the real person behind the resume. And then you look at the resume and think, God, like, you're so good and you're selling yourself so short. No wonder you've been on the market for a while, or no wonder you haven't had a break. No, it's definitely worth mentioning. But yeah, as we move on, Kristen, to mindfulness. So I do think, just for me as well as the listeners, like, I'm fascinated to hear if you're into that. Is there anything you could tell us that could benefit us, or anything for getting our minds or getting ourselves into a nice headspace, or any kind of things on the brain you can give us?
Yeah. So one of the things that's really helpful to me, so I was diagnosed with a borderline personality disorder. I have anxiety, I have depression, and for me, when I feel as though that I'm spiraling, I do a lot of grounding techniques. I will go to the sink and I will splash cold water on my face. And that literally snaps you out of whatever, because your body naturally goes to, oh my gosh, that's cold. Or I will look around the room and find everything in the room that is brown color. So I do something immediately that will take my mind off of it, something that provides some instantaneous reaction. So that's a lot. I use a lot of grounding techniques. I think yoga is really a big deal that helps. I have a lot of autoimmune diseases. So Tai Chi is something that I really got into during COVID. I just YouTube videos, and it really helps you just settle your mind and pay attention to the movements, because they are so fluid. So you don't have a lot of space in your head to be thinking about, oh my gosh, I have 57 chores to do and I have work and I have this and that, because that's really what kind of builds up my anxiety. So Tai Chi is great for mindfulness and helping to really settle. Reading a book that has transformed my life when it comes to mental health stuff. It's called The Body Keeps the Score. And it's about how to bring your brain, mind, and body all together and heal, and how to deal with traumatic stresses that you may have. I go back to that book all the time. It's highlighted. It's written in. It's written by the gentleman who discovered PTSD in the military. And so it really takes you on this journey that shows you that there are ways to get through what you're going through. And they're not, they don't have to be overwhelming. And they're super simple techniques that you can do that snap you back into reality and get you out of that head that you're in. It's a fantastic book. It has been recommended to me by multiple therapists, relatives that have dealt with mental health stuff, and you can get it on Amazon. And it's, and what I like about it too, it's not overly technical or overly medical oriented. It's very, I like to call it a user-friendly book. It's easy to read. It's really easy to comprehend. And it's like mind-blowing. It really is mind-blowing. It gives you a ton of different techniques within the book too.
Yeah, no, cool. Thanks for that. And it's, when you talk about it's not overly technical, I like that, because it's like going back to meditation. Like I've heard, oh, I'm not very good, or I always lose concentration. But I always lose concentration when I'm doing it. But if I do it for like 2 or 3 minutes and I get 30 seconds where it's great, or even if I get 5 or 10 seconds, that's still like the mind actually just recuperating and decompressing for 5 or 10 seconds longer than it would have done. So I think people just need to take the gains. The cold water thing's fascinating, by the way. So have you ever done an ice bath?
I would love to, but I have Raynaud's. It affects my hands and my feet. So cold really paralyzes me. So I would love to do ice baths. I've done, like, I've jumped in when I've been really spiraling. I've jumped into a cold shower. And let me tell you, that changes everything, because your body goes to, I got to get warm. I got to get warm. And you forget everything. You do. So the cold water, I've also done, like when it's cold outside here in the States, I'll go outside on my deck in my bare feet for 30 seconds, 45 seconds, and that snaps you out of it too. Yeah. So there's great techniques that are really simple. And my advice to anybody who wants to meditate is start off with guided meditation. And that really will help you learn how to focus, because I couldn't just meditate on my own. I still can't. At one point I could. During COVID, I was really good at it. I got up to, I think 20 minutes was the longest that I was able to do. But I'm back to having to use guided meditation. And that just helps me focus a lot. Focus on what that person is saying about your body, your mind, and then it just all flows from there.
It's just getting yourself to do it. Because when you think about it, like whoever says they haven't got 20 minutes or they haven't got 5 minutes, of course you have. Like a lot of us are working remote. Like we can all find like 5-10 minutes. So it does make a difference. Even stopping, Kristen, to doing these pods, like it's almost like a form of like, therapy meditation for me, like me listening to you now and you telling me about these benefits, like it's really like I've had a stupidly busy day today, but like just stopping to do this is like a bit of like
I enjoy it.
It's almost like a form of meditation, I find. It's really nice. But the cold water stuff, there was a survey and there were some people with depression and they measured them with regular cold water therapy sessions and it really helped. And I know that I went through a phase of that. I'm in the Middle East at the minute. I'm in Dubai, but when I'm in London, I blow up ice bath and London's freezing cold most of the time. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to have any machinery. So just to blow up ice bath outside. And I used to just get in it every morning at about 5 or 6 Celsius. And it just put you on a natural high. And like I say, you can't think about anything else.
No, you got to totally focus on that. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with a gentleman, Wim Hof.
Yeah, yes, I am.
Yeah. So that's all about cold water plunging and breathing and the meditation aspect of things. And I think for the meditation part, I think it's reasonable to say I could only do 30 seconds because you got to work your way up to it.
You absolutely
have to work your way up to it. So to make it less overwhelming for somebody, commit to doing 30 seconds of it or a minute. Everybody has that. It's the time that it takes to look at your cell phone throughout the day when you know that you have a text message. Sit there and instead of looking at your cell phone, do 30 seconds of just meditation. Start from your feet, feel your toes, work your way up, feel your knees, feel your legs, feel your arms. And I find that really helps a lot, just halting whatever you're doing and just calming yourself down.
Definitely. I just find my capacity to deal with what's going on is just drastically increased. Like it gives you an ability to just basically sit back almost and have a helicopter overview of yourself and your own life. And you think something's major and maybe it's not so major when you've meditated and you can step back. But it's like the times when you're really stressed and you almost can't do it or can't bring yourself to do it. That is when you need it the most. But it's
absolutely, it's a discipline.
You're literally inspiring. Because when I think about the way I've acted like the last couple of days, I've got all sorts going on in my personal life. We've got loads going on in the agency and clients wanting this and that. And I'm literally thinking, this is the way that I've been acting stressed is probably a lot to do with the fact that I'm not meditating. It probably
is. And a good place to meditate is on a plane, especially with guided meditation, because planes inevitably, I don't care if you're the most mentally healthy person in the world, airports and flying and planes cause this level of stress and anxiety. And it's great to just get in your seat, put your headphones, whatever on, listen to a quick guided meditation, and it really does help settle you.
Yeah, no, definitely. You mentioned going outside and your feet and stuff. You've heard about grounding your feet, and I've heard this on a podcast as well, and apparently this is, what does that do? It's meant to be really good for you though, isn't it?
Yeah, so again, it snaps you out of whatever type of frame of mind that you're in that you might be ruminating. That's something that I deal with a lot, ruminating thoughts. It's just this constant, I focus, hyper-focus on one thing and it just spins in my head and I can't get over it. But again, you walk out onto a cold deck in your bare feet and you are shocked into, oh, it's cold out here, and you totally forget about what you were ruminating about. And the other thing that I really try to focus on too is being very present. So let's say I'm doing the dishes. I focus on doing the dishes. I try my best to not be thinking about, oh my gosh, this is what I need to do tomorrow. I didn't do this today. I'm literally focusing. That to me is one of the hardest things ever, because we are so programmed to have to be able to multitask and do a million different things at once. And especially for me, I'm a single mom. And so for me, it's the constant, what do I need to do next? And I really work on trying to be in the present. And that is the absolute hardest thing for me. And at work, I think sometimes it can be easier at work because you have something right in front of you that you are working on. So it's hard to, when you're on LinkedIn and looking for candidates and really trying to hone in. It's hard to about, oh my gosh, I didn't take the garbage out. I got to get my son here. I got to do this. I think work is a really good place to practice mindfulness in very small increments.
Yeah, it's good. Thanks. And I use this is so relevant for people listening, and I know firsthand it is, because know how you talk about the thought going around your mind and you can't get it off your mind. And, and I know from having candidates in the process and stuff like that, and you ring someone and like, oh God, I thought this, I thought that. So I know this is how a lot of people think. I used to just recruit hackers for a long time, and then eventually I started doing anything within the security ecosystem, but especially hackers. I found that like this kind of like intense level of thinking, it's probably quite conducive with being a good hacker. And yeah, what I'm saying is I think there's a lot of people listening that could really help from this kind of stuff. Cause you know, especially like working, if you're working remote, you're spending more time on your own, a little thought can all of a sudden just creep off into some crazy thoughts. Whereas if you've been in an office and you had 10, 20, 30, 40, 100 people with you, you'd have probably snapped out of it much quicker by having a chat with the person sat next to you or something.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's really important for companies to create kind of a buddy system or a mentorship kind of program. I know if I'm working remote, there's two or three people. Again, I could reach out to anybody in the company, and I know that they would probably drop everything if I went to them. If anybody went to them and said, hey, I really need to talk, because we really promote that within the workplace. But if there's something really serious happening and you need somebody, I think it's really important for organizations to create the environment to let people know it's okay to have a buddy within your company that you can really turn to and you in an immediate situation and really get the support that you need. Something that I'm looking at getting is a certification, like a mental health certification, that will allow people to know that I am a resource, not that they don't know now, but that I am a resource that has gone through training, that can recognize different things and that can help you. And this is a certification through SHRM right now. And I just saw it yesterday and it really appealed to me, because we're also going to be standing up a wellness resource group within JMA as well. And then I'll really heavily get into people like, all right, we're going to do a 10 minute meditation over Teams. So I'm going to push my stuff heavily in that group.
Yeah, that's good. And I think having some accountability like that, because I know from, I like to think of myself as quite a disciplined person. Like I work some long hours and I've got no problem with getting up and cracking it up in the morning. But to actually keep that discipline of meditating consistently for a sustained period of time is something that I've just never cracked. I've always been on and off, but maybe a buddy system, or maybe having, if you were like pinging me going, Tom, are you coming on the Teams that you promised you said you would next week? Yeah. I'd be like, shit, I best go to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Accountability is huge, because those of us with mental health issues, we'll do everything to try not to improve ourselves in that moment. So yeah, having accountability until you get to a point where you're disciplined enough to be able to do things on your own, it's huge to have an accountability partner.
Cool. All right, Kristen, I used to say on this next question, it could be a book or a pod or any content you're consuming that's helped you. Could be from a mental health perspective, could be from a just to make you a better version of yourself or the best version of yourself. But what book or podcast have you listened to over the years that's had the most positive impact on you?
The book that I had mentioned earlier, that has been such a phenomenal resource for me to turn to. Like I said, it's all highlighted. There's notes on the columns. It is truly a life-changing experience reading it. It gets almost 5 stars on Amazon, with close to 100,000 people who have given reviews on it. And I truly think that every single person should read it, because it not only provides insight to yourself, but everybody has a family member, significant other, child, whatever, that is struggling with some type of mental health issue. And this book really gets to the core and helps you understand what that person across from you is going through and how you might be able to help them. Along with helping yourself. So that book has been very transformative for me.
Yeah, cool. We'll definitely get that in the show notes. And did you say it comes highlighted or you'd highlighted?
Oh, I highlight it. Yeah, I do that. And I find every time that I read it or pick up a chapter and go to that chapter, there's new parts that I'm highlighting that are applicable to me in that specific time. So it's a really good book.
Yeah, I've done that with How to Win Friends and Influence People. I've basically just highlighted every bit that means the most to me, and I can just get back through it now in about 15 minutes and loads of value. It's a technique that is, I like that.
Yeah.
And I still prefer reading the, it might sound a bit old school, but I prefer actually the actual book.
And, oh, so do I. Like I have a book that I'm reading right now is Never Lose an Employee Again by Joey Coleman. And it's about retention. And we have really high retention at JMA. And we are constantly looking at ways to engage and create an even more robust culture. So I literally just started reading this book last night and I'm excited to read it. It was recommended. I was at a inclusion conference 2 weeks ago or a week ago in Denver, and it was recommended by one of the speakers that I heard speak. And a really big focus in that conference is creating a psychologically safe workspace. And that everything to do with culture and retention and appreciating your employees and not treating them like commodities, treating them like they are actual human beings. And that starts with the very first conversation that person has with somebody from the organization. So, and usually that's me. So again, I think really honing in on your interpersonal relationship skills as a recruiter and learning how to become vulnerable really creates an environment where there is high retention.
Thanks. My next question was literally going to be, what's in that book that you can tell me and the listeners? But yeah, psychologically safe space and appreciate. The funny thing is like anyone that's treating their staff like a number or a commodity to try and earn some money or whatever it might be, the reality is you're probably going to lose that guy or girl. Then you're going to have to replace them or pay a guy like me or you or a girl like you to replace them. And then it's you're just doing it to try and earn more money, but then really you're probably earning less because they're not working as hard or they're annoyed or they're leaving and you've got churn. Whereas if you actually just do the right thing and be nice, the business will be better. People will say, if you get an amazing employer brand, you probably don't need to use a recruiter as much. So that saves you. But it's okay. Look, if you just do the right thing, it pays off.
I think from the perspective of a retention, if you look at it, you gain trust in employees. And not all the work that these employees, that your employees do on the daily is sexy and fun and riveting. There's some mundane stuff that happens when you're in the IT space. So when you create that culture of trust, of kindness, compassion, empathy, and care, those are the type of things that retain your employees, not the work that's happening, not the salary that you're paying. Now, obviously, you got to pay well, and JMA pays very well. But all the other things that we have to offer are what our people say that keeps them there, like engagement platforms that we use. We do these things every month called Fed Talks, and it's a play on TED Talks, and it's food education discussion, and it's hosted by our president and our executive VP of operations. And it's just a time over lunch. If you're near the corporate office, we do a fully catered lunch for people to come in. If you dial in from your remote location, we allow you to expense up to $20 for a lunch. And it's just a way for the team, the remote team, to get together, see each other. But it also allows people to have direct access to our president, to our executive VP. Sometimes we'll talk about work. Other times we're talking about the movies that we're seeing or travel that people are doing. So it's all about engagement and creating that environment of trust and care.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's good. And I think as well, I always say when we're remote, we're not commuting as much, even if we're hybrid and there's an on-site element there. Like, our travel time's disappeared. So we've got time to eat on a Teams or a Zoom and talk about whatever we want to talk about.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Totally agree.
Cool. Look, we've raced up to an hour. It really, when you get chatting, it really does fly. I know about ready for Thanksgiving.
Kind of.
I'm sure. Are you working 2 or 3 days next week? Or you working?
but it'll be a light week. Nancy, our owner, is always really kind during the holidays. Again, we're people first. We're super family oriented. So it's important that people step away and spend time with their families and re-energize, because in turn, people come back and work harder for us. And that makes things better for the client. And it's just a really beautiful cyclical thing that we have going. Yeah. So I'll probably work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, obviously not Thursday, and then just a little bit on Friday.
Yeah, I think Friday's a write-off the way it's fallen.
Yeah, right. Nancy usually gives us off first. She'll say, go ahead and take the day, whatever. So yeah.
Cool. Yeah, cool. Yeah, very good. Yeah, do you think we've about covered it? Do you think we've about nailed it?
I think it was a great conversation.
It was.
I would think it would be meaningful to a lot of people given the climate of the world right now and how important it is to show kindness and care to people.
Yeah, thanks for your time. It's been really good, and the mental health piece really will. I just know there's a lot of cybersecurity people out there that are spending a lot of time on their own and need to hear these words. So it's good, and thanks for your time, and nice to see you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.